Ed, I think you know that I'm not a sentimental person.
No, not typically. Not overtly. No,
certainly not overtly. Certainly not. But, you know, this time of year makes one reflect, as one does.
Oh, because it's after the World Series, you mean?
Yes. Finally, we're here to announce that this is fully becoming a World Series post Phillies. This is what this podcast is now. This is what it's going to be.
Yep. Got to break it down. Yep.
We got to break it down. And I hope everyone will continue with us on this journey. No, that's not what this is.
We're joking, people.
No, we're joking. I'm saying, I want to say to you that I am grateful and thankful, dare I say. Giving, what's the phrase? Thanksgiving.
Oh.
For your continued friendship, your continued co-hostmanship, your continued tolerance of my flights of fancy, and the absurd questions that I will throw at you. So I want to say thank you for that at this Thanksgiving time of year.
You know what, Jared, I'm touched and I appreciate it. And you know, I feel the same about you. Very thankful, very filled with gratitude with your friendship, you in my life. Very, 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 a lot of gratitude for that. So feel the same, my friend. And I think we could say probably jointly, all those folks out there listening, big old thanks.
Huge thanks. Huge thanks. Mean, I can't believe people listen to the two of us talk about anything, first of all, but I am so grateful that they do. And I have the list here in front of me, and I know we talked about this a little bit at the last pod, but we've had people listen to us, of course, here in the United States, in the United Kingdom, but then as far away as Malaysia, Finland, the Russian Federation, which I'm not sure why that's different than Russia, but apparently it is.
Oh, it could
Hungary,
be one of the satellite
Kazakhstan. Russians. Someone listened to us in Kazakhstan.
I love it.
Our Kazakhstan, our single Kazakhstan listener, I say welcome.
Welcome. Welcome. And I think what we should start doing, it's a little short notice for you here, Jared, but I think starting with our next pod,
yeah,
we should do a quick listener, international listener appreciation shout out to a random country, which you will then add some Jared's facts and figures about that particular location.
You know what? This is not a bad idea. I mean, of course, it's more labor for me, and
sure,
you still get to skate by and not do a lot.
True,
but I take up this challenge as something that I think is worthy of consideration.
I do too. I think it'd be great. I think the listeners would appreciate it.
I'm sure. Well, maybe they would. We'll see.
They'll let us.
But
know.
As this is our official Thanksgiving episode,
mm-hmm.
This episode's coming out the Sunday after Thanksgiving. Hope everyone's having a good weekend with their friends and their family,
yep,
and whoever you spend your time with,
yep,
pets, animals,
anything,
I don't know, whatever you got,
yep,
puppets, if that's your thing. We're not going to judge you if puppets are your thing.
Not here on the air anyway.
No, not on the air. Certainly not on the air.
Certainly.
No, we'll talk about it afterwards, but we hope everyone is well and enjoying a good and restful holiday.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And to that point, we're thankful for this record, are we not?
Well, listen, we're thankful for any record.
That's
by
true.
Prince.
That's true.
And I would say maybe Prince might have gone on the record to say that 2004, he was grateful for what that year was, what was in store for him in 2004, which I felt like put a lot of this work in motion for him. This is a very strategic year for him, in my opinion, on the release of this particular album, which is called what, Jared?
I believe it's called Musicology.
Doo-doo.
Is the title of this record.
Yeah. So, you know, Prince, let's talk about 2004 a little bit, if you don't mind. Can we do that now? Or am
sure.
I
no, we can talk about 2004.
I mean, in retrospect, I mean, it all of this makes a lot of sense when you kind of look in the rearview mirror now about 2004 and what was going on with Prince. He was up for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for 2004.
He was.
Smart money would say he's going to get in the first ballot, which he did. So he really filled out the year with a lot of kind of mass appeal. Like he knew he was going to get the spotlight back, and he took full advantage. And there was a couple things that happened in 2004. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and we'll talk about maybe briefly, maybe we'll do a separate discussion on that legendary, dare I say, legendary performance.
I suspect we will. I suspect people
when my guitar jazz leaves.
There's going to be probably a special little bonus pod on the on that epic performance.
Yeah, that one. And we may even couple into that discussion. He also had famously been asked to do the Grammys as like an opening act for years and turned him down. But hey, surprisingly, 2004, he says, you know what? I'll do it and throw it. Let's do it with Beyonce. Let me do it with the arguably the hottest act on the planet at the time. And I'll have her join me and sing some duets of Purple Rain material. So, I mean, he was rocking and rolling and he had a tour. He had a big, big, big tour.
Huge tour
for that year as well. So there was a lot going on there. And then this album got released called Musicology, and it was absolutely, I'll get ahead of it. It was absolutely, I think, pretty much across the board well-received. And the label, and I'd love to talk about you maybe with you and debate this a little bit, sort of that return to form album that you hear about famously from a lot of more legendary or veteran acts when maybe they haven't been having had some hit records for a while and they have something that it seems like it gets somewhat of a mass appeal or kind of breaks through and people are like now like, oh yeah, what about this person? We forgot about them.
Yeah, no, that's right. And yeah, I'm actually looking forward to that debate. I have some very specific thoughts on it, which we will dive into. My memory of Musicology is certainly, you know, not dissimilar from yours in that this album sort of catapulted him back into the public consciousness, you know, right or wrong, because of all those elements that you just mentioned, but also primarily for me because of the tour. And as we've mentioned before, this was the first time I saw him was on this tour here.
Maybe
we'll do a little at some point down the road. We've talked about this. Maybe we'll do an episode just about the tours. And we sort of dive into those a little. But this tour was banging from top to bottom. It really, really was. And so that was a big thing for me. Now, again, not wanting to get ahead of it, but should we get into the facts and figures now? Or is there more you want to say?
I'll say more things maybe at the tail end of facts and figures. People love that segment. So let's get right into that.
You know, I appreciate your confidence. I'm not sure people love it, but I appreciate your confidence.
I love it. I love it.
And that's really all. I'm grateful
for facts and figures.
It's excellent. Yeah. So let's do it. Let's just make it happen. These are the
Jared
facts and
Brindos,
figures.
Those 2004 Musicology facts and figures.
Yes, indeed. Here they are. Musicology was released on April 20th, 2004. It was recorded. Some of these tracks are earlier. Some of them were recorded as early as 1995, but it was really between 2000, 2004. The length of the album is 47 minutes and 26 seconds. Of course, Prince was his own producer. This was his 28th studio album.
Mm-hmm.
A few things about this record, I'm sure a lot of people remember. This album was given as a gift to concert goers on the Musicology tour.
Yeah.
Then that tour was from March to September of 2004. So everyone who showed up got a copy of the record.
There was a bunch of them.
Yep, sure. Yep. There was a digital release that came out 2 days after the tour started on March 29th. The physical copy was released on April 19th in Europe and April 20th in the States.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first album in 5 years that Prince released through a major label. And in this instance, it was Sony Music.
Yeah.
That's interesting. To your point, it did generally get positive reviews. Of course, in a moment, I'll dive into some of those reviews. It was his most successful record in a long, long time. It was actually his most successful record sales-wise since Diamonds and Pearls. It got up to number 3 on the Billboard 200. And it was the first album to chart at all since Rainbow Children, which is not surprising.
Perhaps because of a technicality that he had such a huge hit.
Perhaps, but still. He did win a couple of Grammy Awards. He won the Grammy Award for Best Traditional R&B Vocal Performance for Musicology. Well, and best male R&B vocal performance for Call My Name. Ooh. I would just like to say, as we have mentioned before, the Grammy categories are absolutely insane. They don't make a lick of sense.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Whatever. He won. It was certified, Musicology was certified double platinum. And at the time of the release, Prince was quoted as saying he wished Musicology would provide musical education to his listeners.
Perhaps there you go. The
title.
Yep.
And Prince was chosen by Rolling Stone that year, by Rolling Stone's readers, as the best male performer and the most welcome comeback.
Sure.
Sure.
Makes sense.
Totally makes sense. Ed, there were three singles. We haven't done this in a while.
Oh, right.
There were three singles from Musicology. Can you name all three?
I'm feeling confident today, Jared.
All right. I like it. I like this.
Right off the top, we got the title track, Musicology.
Musicology, correct. April 3rd, 2004.
We got a spicy little number called Cinnamon Girl, which is the second one.
That was the third single.
Actually. I mean, the third one. Did I say second? I think I might have misspoke.
You meant third. That Cinnamon Girl was released on September
7th, 2004. And the aforementioned Call My Name.
Call My Name was May 21st, 2004. That is correct. Let's see. What else do I want to say here before I get into the reviews? Anything else? Well, Ed, to your point, part of the album's chart success was due to the fact that concertgoers got a free copy of it. It was included in the price of the ticket. So this prompted Billboard and the Nielsen SoundScan to change its data.
Yeah.
How they would pursue that data.
Yeah.
So for future album releases, Billboard said that customers, quote, must be given an option to either add the CD to the ticket purchased or forego the CD for a reduced ticket only price. So that's how that happens in the future.
He's a smart business guy, man.
Oh, for
I'll
sure.
Tell you right now.
For sure. And there was a vinyl edition released 3 years ago in February 2019, purple vinyl. I do not have it. Do you have it?
I do not, no.
No. No. I might get it at some point.
And I want to add too, Jared, I remember, and maybe I'm getting a little ahead of things, but I remember besides the release, getting a physical copy at the concert, there was also a live broadcast beamed through various movie theaters of opening night in LA.
Right. Yes.
Which I went to, and you also got a copy of the
album
if you bought a ticket to that actual screening. So free discs were flying all over the place to all the Prince fans.
You know, what's interesting. It's reminiscent to me. I was thinking about this earlier and I was going to bring this up. There are things that happen here in the story of sort of the release of Musicology that echo U2 to me for a number of reasons. Some of them I'll get to later, but one of the reasons is that, of course, U2 also famously gave away an album for free.
Oh, it's on my iPhone. Where'd that come from?
Type of thing. Right, exactly. And a lot of people got pissed off about it.
Yeah.
I didn't care. Of course, I'm a giant U2 fan, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
But there is an interesting parallel here, and there's one later that I'm going to bring up. But anyway, let me dive into some of the reviews.
Please do.
For Musicology. So first of all, we have our old friends at the Star Tribune, Minneapolis.
Hey, Minneapolis.
They said this, quote, "This could be labeled suitable for all adults for a change. A strikingly mature celebration of marriage and monogamy. It's his most focused and consistent album since Love Sexy. While the music isn't groundbreaking, the songwriting displays some of his most fully developed ideas in years."
Yeah.
"The crowning cuts are A Million Days and Musicology."
Okay.
That's what the Star Tribune had to say.
Uh-huh.
And then our friends over in the UK at Goldie's Parade, they gave it 4 stars, and they said this, quote, "Musicology came as a pleasant surprise to fans and more so Prince, since it turned out to be his most successful album since Diamonds and Pearls. It became his long-awaited post-Warner Brothers commercial comeback. Music comes before the ology, tells Prince, and the album is intended to be an education in music. Mm-hmm. School's in for Musicology."
Okay.
So they had to say. Esquire. In their ranking of all of his albums, they ranked it 19th.
Really?
Which I think it's interesting. Hmm. And they said this, "The follow-up to the previous year's instrumental albums, Expectation and News, which are worth hearing but not included on our vocal-centric album ranking, Musicology bounces, rolls, and struts with admirable ease. Life of the Party is as concise and as winning as many of Prince's late 80s anthems, while On the Couch does for the relationship doghouse what Sequins do for cheap costumes. Aside from its pretentious, if genuine, music education goals, it sounds refreshed and unhurried in a way that few other Prince albums do."
I'm going to repeat some just to make sure I heard this correctly. Life of the Party is as good as some of his late 80s anthems. Is that what they just said?
Well,
right,
it doesn't say as good. It says as concise and as winning.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get to that track.
Well, we'll get there. The Guardian.
Yeah.
They ranked it 26th.
Okay.
Which is fairly low.
Yeah.
They gave it 3 stars and they said, quote, Prince comes in from the cold with his first major label release in years and an impressive cast of collaborators, Sheila E., Maceo Parker, Candy Dulfer. That's it. That's all that they have to say.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Stereo Gum. They ranked Musicology 23rd and they said this, quote, is there anything sadder than the words a return to form? They say volumes less about the object than the speaker. Someone yearning to be delighted in a familiar way. Someone who demands heroism or nothing. Someone who's not up for finding their way into a dispatch from where the artist is now. But it's just as sad when the artist buys into it. The title track is one of those noxious back-in-the-days tracks. It's shuffling funk masking the terror that time is marching on. He name checks the usual suspects, Earth, Wind, and Fire, James Brown, Chuck D, Jam Master J, offering easy sucker to one half of his audience, condescension to the other. For an advance on the mainstream, it sure looks like a white flag.
Wow.
Pretty tough. Wow. That's pretty rough.
Yikes. Yeah.
That's pretty rough.
Wow. Who was that again? Which was that? Who reviewed
that's
that?
Stereo Gum.
Stereo Gum. Okay.
Stereo Gum. Gotcha. Okay. The Rolling Stone album guide.
Hey.
3.5 stars.
Oh.
And they said, quote, Musicology isn't quite the great comeback it's claimed to be, but after nearly a decade in the wilderness, its solid groove and modest feel will certainly do.
Okay.
Okay. And then, Ed, here's the moment you've been waiting for.
Tell me the Dean has returned. Is the Dean in the building?
The Dean is back. Bobby C.
Dum, 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 dum.
Bobby C., we're so glad to have you, Robert Christgau, the Dean of American Rock Critics. I excerpt the whole review because I knew you'd want to hear what
he said. Please, I'm pleased, yes.
So here we go. Our old friend, the Dean, Bobby C., Robert Christgau, here's what he said. Musicology, good title. Early on the music's attraction with all the things he proved belonged in one place. Prince's rainbow was aural, and his listeners knew it. Here were funk beats and rock beats, blunt come-ons and sly metaphors, dinky keyboard hooks and killer guitar solos, and a singing voice that was an array of voices. Smooth pop, sweet croon, deep soul, funny funk, casual speech, unreal shrieks and coos and basso profundos, harmonies to die for, and falsetto to knock your fillings out. But though in the 90s these elements were often recombined effectively, always their sound was big, full, slamming. Musicology is noticeably spare and controlled. This development gratifies its admirers, and rightly so. As long as it's added that spareness is only a precondition. If Prince has made music like this before, it must be on his website.
Huh.
The lead track, first single and MTV staple Musicology, establishes his method. It's a straight James Brown rip. Jimmy Nolan guitar, understated bass, curly Q, syncopated tom, daubs of organ and faux horn, irregular backup vocals, and with every sound, presumably including the thugs and munchkins, provided by Prince himself. The back-in-the-day lyric claiming JB, Sly, Earth, Wind & Fire, old-school rap, and bands not turntables might render this unspontaneous multitracking a contradiction. But hell, he contains multitudes, and he loves playing with himself. Illusion, Coma, Pimp, and Circumstance is just as lean and more out. The patched-in guitar fills, startling, yet right rhythmically and harmonically, the scratches an extra contradiction. The requisite Life of the Party adds female vocals and femme sax to Prince's one-man singing group and ersatz horn charts. There's an up-tempo trifecta through track 4, interrupted by one of 3 synthed-up ballads where he loses his mental toughness. And then, having gotten our attention and assent, this lifelong tease slows the pace permanently, without materially harming the record. Pleasant shocks lurk near the surface and go against the flow of the quality material, and almost everything packs payback. apt rock guitar tuning into apt tasty guitar, vocal calculations that could have only been improvised, right? Godfathered horn charts, some live, Maceo, exclamation point. As for the lyrics, who cares? Track two isn't about a dirty dog and an evil rich white woman. It's about the meters gone pomo. And although the confusion of Cinnamon Girl suits its doomed attempt to blur color lines, where the confusion of 2001's Rainbow Children made the same goal a travesty, its doomed appeal to the good book reminds us that Prince is now a Jehovah's Witness, which bodes ill for his significance.
Ooh.
Better, although hardly as newsworthy as Entertainment Weekly pretends, is his conversion to monogamy, which yields the yearning eros of On the Couch, as well as one one about resisting a female fan that has Garth Brooks written all over it. But better still is the musicology itself. The rock star mantle implies obligations we shouldn't give up on just because Prince hasn't made the most of them. But James Brown just ignored them, and that hasn't stopped him.
Huh.
And there we have it.
The Dean.
The Dean.
Welcome back, Dean.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back. I mean, so good to hear his words.
It's good to hear his words. I mean, he can certainly turn a phrase, and he's not short of opinion.
That is true. That is true.
So those are a smattering of the facts and figures on musicology.
Love it. Love it.
There you go.
Thank you, Jared.
You're welcome. We're thankful for that. Thank you. Ed, should we do this to this? Are you ready to
get right into it? Yeah.
Let's do it. Here we go. Track number one on musicology, the title track, musicology. This is just another one of God's gifts, musicology. Got to keep the party moving, like I told you. Keep the old school joint for the true funk soldiers. Musicology. Ed, did you ever study any music classes? Did you have any music classes in college?
Not in college, but actually I took piano, just to give you some background. I took piano when I was very young with a nun who was, you know, upwards of like 95 years old.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
Right? Would fall asleep during the lesson kind of thing.
Yeah, you bet she would.
Right? I wanted to play baseball. You know, I was ready to be a Philly. Like I didn't want to worry about it. So right. That lasted a year or so. And I would just kind of mess around with piano. We had a piano at my house. In my high school, like junior year, I wanted to take piano again. I wanted to specifically take blues piano. So I took lessons with someone and she happened to be a teacher at my high school. She also taught music theory. So I ended up taking a music theory class. It was shitloads harder than I ever imagined.
It's really hard. Right.
It was really a hard, hard class.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you take any music like theory or any music class like that?
I took a class in college called the Symphony.
Okay.
And the most remarkable thing about it was that the professor, I don't know, seemed a bit addled. And so he would not pay attention to anything anyone was doing in class.
Okay.
So students would just get up with cigarettes behind their ears and walk out so they could smoke outside. Or like one time we turned the desk around of someone in class and so he would face the wrong way, never noticed it. People would do all kinds of crazy shit. And we all passed. And this poor guy, he would just sort of, I mean, he also was probably 158,000 years old and he would just sort of drone on and on and on about the symphony and what made a good symphony. And I was interested. That's why I took the class, but none of us could pay attention because it was a classic example of like the college professor who you don't even, if it wasn't for tenure, he wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was my musical, education in that aspect. Musicology. There it was.
If you could go back today and take some type of music class, what would you take?
And is this, well, let me ask a clarifying question. Is it like, are you saying would I learn an instrument or would I study a class about the history and theory of music?
I'll give you either option.
Well, if it was about learning an instrument, and you know, I can play the guitar a little bit, as you know, but I would have loved to have been taking classes at a really young age on like the drums, for example.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I could have been a drummer.
Hmm.
Yeah. There you go. That's my story.
Life of regret. Let's move on.
Life of regret. That's my whole, that's it. That's my whole thing. It's a life of regret. That's all I got. What do you think of Musicology, the title track on this album? What do you think?
It's effective, right? It's, how can you resist the bass line in this and the rhythm guitar?
You can't, like, it can't be done. It can't be done.
You can't mess with it. Like from his first that he sings and the bass and the rhythm and the drum roll, like, it's like, it hooks you in. And he, you know, coming from where we came from recently with News, Expectation and Rainbow Children, which was, you know, some of it was super complex, sophisticated music. He's coming back with, hey, look, funk, simple, lean. That's what I need. That's all you need, right? A nice hook. Keep it simple. Don't need to complicate it. And he famously said at one point that if you could define a song, it wasn't funky, right? Like if you could actually, then it's not a funky song. Like if you can explain it, then it's not funky. So I think this is like exhibit A of all this. It's just, like I said, it's like a lesson in how you can have just a nice, simple, tight bottom line and it can hold the song together for the longest time, you know? I love the that breakout where he does the humor in this album. I think there's some nice humor moments throughout this album that are sprinkled in. His humor comes out nicely here, which is great for like a let's come back to the public type of thing. I think it doesn't hurt to have that element added to the record. That whole thing, like these are my records, don't touch my records, I think is hilarious.
I love it. I love it. I was going to speak about that. I love it.
Anyway, so like around the 207 mark, he does that. And that's probably one of my, it may be my top moment. We'll see. There's a couple moments in here that I kind of dig on the album in general, but like when he does that stop, these are my records and it comes back to the baseline.
Yeah.
Funky as all can be. It just makes that line even sound funkier after he does the break. Like it's really great. I don't like the keyboards though. I don't like the keyboards he uses about halfway through the song.
Okay.
They sound very Casio to me. They sound very cheap. It's like if you're talking about real musicians, dude, just why not bring some horn? You got players, you know Candy, you know Maceo, you know Eric. You could play the funky horns, funky bald heads, whatever. Like bring some more players in, right? Play it.
Right.
So I kind of, that's the one little disappointing moment for me is that he's bringing those keys in for some of the lines, which I think sound really dated. Even in 2004, they sound even more dated now to me when I hear them, you know? And then you want to talk about the outro now? Or do you want to talk about it separately? Or do you want to just talk about the music right now?
You can talk about the outro. I have some thoughts on it too.
Okay, I'll talk about the outro. And I have like one more thing to say about the song and then I'd love to hear what you thought about it. You know, it reminded me, even back in 2004, I got to go back to 87. I had bought an Earth, Wind, and Fire album that was out. It was called Touch the World. It was one of their return to form albums, right?
Right.
They, as folks know, Earth, Wind, and Fire, their heyday was 70s, right? Early 80s at the latest, probably. They had a song that transitioned to another song where it was a radio slide and it played like Shining Star, September, all their greatest hits. And I thought at the time, this is a band saying our best stuff's behind us.
Right.
And I can't lie and say I didn't feel the same thing when I heard this the first time with Prince.
Interesting.
I kind of thought, why is he doing? He's such a forward looking guy. But I guess like he's saying, hey, it's my time, especially with the year. I think this year is so important to him. Not bad to reminisce, not bad to look back, given that he's being inducted into the Hall of Fame, given all that he sees coming in this year. Let's take a step back and appreciate the catalog, appreciate the songs he's done in the past. So I guess it's okay. I had mixed feelings about it. It felt a little bit like, my best stuff's back on the radio from, in the 80s and whatever, but recognize me, man. I'm still relevant. It kind of how it felt a little bit. So maybe a little bit, maybe not as severe as that one review said about what, this sort of white flag or whatever, but it had a little taste of that to me, honestly. But one thing I think that's incredibly important about this song actually is it's a new mission statement for him. Now, he touched upon this in the 90s live where he would say, hey, real music by real musicians. He would use it as a mantra a lot. Here he's doing it in a way that he knows is going to be projected to a mass public. Right. So this is like a phase three in my mind in his army of people. Right. You had the new breed leaders back with Dirty Mind Controversy. You had the new power generation that he would call out. in the late 80s through the 90s. And now he talks about the True Funk Soldiers. So this is his third round and his final round, sadly, of his sort of army that he builds. Maybe not as big as an army as his past armies, but this army of people he's saying are going to appreciate real music, real musicians, you know? I have some more things to say, but I feel like I'm blabbing forever. Should I give you a little time?
I mean, if you want this to be a solo pod, you can just keep going. I mean, I can just step aside if you want to just.
I'll say one more thing. And I'll
I mean, I can just wait here. Yeah.
One last thing, lyrically, real quick. And then this is, again, kind of goes back to that one review you mentioned. He's putting current trends to task, right? From this, like at the era of this era, more producer driven electro pop of the day. But to me, it was a little sad to see him go from setting the trend. I mean, it's a natural evolution of where he is as an artist, setting the trends in the 80s, kind of grabbing the trends or trying to grab onto a trend in the 90s. And now he's just basically dissing the trends, right? Now he's saying, yeah, the trends, right? Yeah. I'm just going to go old school. I'm not going to even try. I'm not going to worry about it, trying to catch what's going on right now. So I have mixed feelings. I like the track. I think it's funky. It's a nice start of the track. I like what he's saying here generally, but I also have, there's a little melancholy for me as a listener. Cause I do kind of feel like, he is kind of maybe saying I need to just hand it over to the younger generation. This is my stuff. Let's not forget is kind of what I hear this from the song. Let's not forget this type of music. What'd you think, Dear Jared?
Well, I'm really glad to start this way because, of course, everything you just said is completely wrong. It's all just that excites me. Everyone who is out there who's bitching about it's like it's a white flag and it's the black. Everyone needs to shut up because musicology is a jam.
You think it's and a false flag?
It's a false flag. Let's be careful. It's a musicology is a jam, and for whatever, you know. Oh, is it, you know, it's a deliberate choice or he's surrendering, blah, blah, blah. I don't care about any of that because the song is a jam. And I don't care that he's name checking all of his great influences and contemporaries. I don't care because the song jams. It's funky. It's funny. It grooves. And what's more is I'm going to disagree with you on this point in particular. When he says, you know, don't ever touch my stereo. Don't ever touch my records. Right. Mm-hmm. For me, that's working on two levels. One is the funny bit of like sort of all of us obsessive music people like, no, don't touch that. No. Leave it where it is. Right. We're all of us who are obsessive that way are like that. But I also think he's talking about my records, Prince's records. Don't ever touch my records. Right. And so to me, what he's doing at the end in the outro, it's not to me, it's not a surrender. It's not a, listen, here's a little quick smash medley of little hits. To me, this is, do you see how ubiquitous I am on the radio? And I still am. Do you see how much this, all of this stuff mattered and still matters? And I have been dismissed. You've been dismissing me. And I am still this person. And you have to give me the chance to show you that I am. That's how I read that. I don't think, and you know, the issue of, you know, in all seriousness, I think it's an interesting question about, is he sort of giving up the ghost on leading the forefront, right? Is he, that's an interesting question. But to me, what I would say is, but what was happening at the forefront at that time kind of sucked. I don't think it was any good. And so I think Prince reclaiming or finding rather, that what really matters to the listener is what matters to the listener, that I am continually exploring new things, even if they don't fit me, or what matters to the listener is, am I true to the soul of who I am as an artist? Prince is not a guy who did electronica. Prince is not a guy who, right? That's not who he was.
Right.
He was a soul funk pop musician.
Right.
Who was at the top of his craft. So, you know what? Let me do that because I haven't done it. And I'll go now. I guess I'll talk about it now. What I, because this is now a solo pod for me.
No, go. I'm giving you, I want to give you equal time. Then you can yield the floor.
When I mentioned the new Speaker of the House, Edward Miller. When I mentioned you two earlier, the reason I was thinking about them in conjunction with this record is because in 2001, you two released the album All That You Can't Leave Behind.
Mm.
And that was considered by many to be their return to form record.
Yep. Right?
They had gone from Joshua Tree to a radical change in Octoon Baby, pushing that even further with Zooropa. And then the album after Zooropa was Pop, which is an album I actually love, but it turned a lot of people off.
Yep.
And it didn't sell that well, and so forth and so on. And The Edge pulled Bono into a studio and made him listen to their greatest hits album. And he said, this is who we need to go back to. We need to go back to the core of what we are. And the first single off of that album is Beautiful Day. You remember that song?
Yep.
When they were recording that song, they called the riff that The Edge came up with for that song, the classic Coke riff. Mm. That's what they called it. In other words, this is something that sounds like U2.
Right.
Right. And this is this whole album is a similar thing.
Hmm.
Whereas these songs, and we're going to debate their quality,
right?
But these songs sound like Prince.
Mm-hmm.
They don't sound like Prince doing jazz. They don't sound like Prince doing some weird experimental thing. They sound like Prince. And to me, that has value as a listener, much like it did for U2.
Hmm.
And that album for U2, All That You Can't Leave Behind, which is an album I like a lot, but I think suffers from something similar here, which is that it was widely acclaimed at the time. And as time has passed since these two records have come out, people have kind of go, well, actually, I don't know. It's okay.
Right.
Maybe it's not as strong of a record as I thought it was at the time.
Yep.
But it was such a relief to hear the artists you love return to who they actually are rather than these further experimentations. And let me say this. I'm a believer in experimentation. I want artists like U2, like Prince, like a Bowie, like whoever else, they have the right to do whatever they want. They don't owe me anything. They can do anything they want in terms of their sound. But I do think that there is something about returning to the root of who you are as an artist. What got you there in the first place?
Hmm.
And so for me, it's just not an issue of, oh, he's no longer at the forefront. Who cares? Who cares? If the music jams, what does it matter? That's how I feel about it. And the title track here jams. And everyone who's like, no, blah, 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 you're being cynical. Not you, Ed. I mean, you are cynical. But like, that's not true. This is a great song. And it's a great opening track. And it's fun. And it's funky. And you want to groove to it. So I say amen to musicology. And there you have it.
I mean, what else could be said?
Nothing. We're going to wrap up the pod now today.
That was already, I think, 2 hours worth of material.
That's already 2 hours worth of material.
Yeah. I want to add one last, I'll hold a general thought, and I'll come back to it as we talk about the album in general. But I want to mention this. So I remember this. So on the MPG Music Club website, you could wander through various rooms in Paisley. Like, there's this world he created, and there was a studio.
Yeah.
And in the studio, there were little, like a saxophone and all of them. I didn't even realize at the time, because this was done maybe a year or two before this album was released.
Yeah.
All of them had a mini sample from this song. Played the bass line.
Right.
And there was an actual contest for members to create your own version of the song. Of a song. We didn't know it was musicology at the time.
Right.
Of a song based on the drum,
the parts the keys, that were available,
all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I tried hard to find if there's anybody out there anywhere that had a recording of like one of the mixes that won. Couldn't find it, sadly. I would have loved to hear something that was,
oh my God, that'd be awesome. Winner.
But I remember
if anybody listening has it,
oh
let
my
us
God,
know.
Please. If any of you guys out there who are the Prince heads were back in the day doing this or even put one together that didn't win, I would love to hear it. I mean, because it was such a fun idea, I thought. So I'd love to hear anything, if anything's out there that can be listened to.
There it is.
Awesome. Should we move on to track two? Do we have enough time?
I'm not sure.
There we
are. Every other track is going to have to be a 30-second review.
All right. This one, am I right? Is this right? Illusion, Pimp, Coma, and Circumstance. Did I say this wrong? Is it in the wrong order?
It's Illusion, Coma, Pimp, and Circumstance.
I wrote it down in the wrong order. Isn't that crazy? It's like north, east, west, and south. All right. We'll be back in a sec. All right, of those four words, rank them in order of importance to you, Jared Delaney.
Well, obviously, Pimp is number one with a bullet, obviously.
I'm not surprised.
Then Coma, then Illusion, then Circumstances last, I think.
Dead last, Circumstance.
Dead last is Circumstance.
You don't want to be a victim of circumstance, right?
You don't want to be a victim of circumstance. You don't want to think about your circumstances either. Just kind of be in the moment. That's it.
All right, that's fair. Yeah. What do you think about this song? Where's this song rank in your heart?
You know what? I dig it. I dig Illusion, Coma, Pimp, and Circumstance. It is of a similar rhythmic vein as Musicology, right? The sort of like tight little picked guitar licks, which I really dig. And I kind of dig the narrative, this funny story about this lady and what she goes through and everything. But this is a song that when I put it on, it feels lean. It feels dirty. It feels grimy in the funky, fun kind of way. And I'm into it. And I also think the title is clever. And like, you know, cause of course it would be pomp and circumstance would be what you would normally say. But to think of those four words together, illusion, coma, pimp, and circumstance, really says a lot about a person, I think, and says a lot about the characters in this particular track. So I like it. And I think this is an instance where it is a perfectly sequenced, like coming right after Musicology is right. It's a cousin to that song rhythmically and sonically. So it fits really well for me in the number two slot. What do you think?
It's funny you say that because like it reminds me in its placement. It's hard for me not to, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this at some point during the pod if we have enough time, to talk about this album's maybe success compared to Rave. Because I think this verse is undisputed as the second song, right?
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Right? I think this is a more successful, unfortunately. I mean, even though Chuck D's on the other one. But like, this might be one of the best storytelling songs that Prince had, especially in terms of humor. I think it's kind of funny.
It's up there. I agree.
He does a really nice job with it. I mean, it's not Dorothy Parker, which probably be my favorite of storytelling songs, but this is a good one, right? I love it. Like you said, that there's an interesting stuttering. I think it's a keyboard. I don't know if it's a guitar. I don't know. It's one of those things. Some interesting minor notes being played. I think his vocal is really interesting on the chorus here because it's sort of this, although it's funny, like the vocal almost like has this sort of like desperate crying plea out to it, the way that it's like strained, the way he sings it. And I don't know if that's like just a little touch of judgment about the characters maybe. And
I think so.
I think that's really interesting that he throws it in there. I think the line about flow that he called her flow is pretty kind of funny, right?
Yeah,
it's like fluorescent. I mean, it's funny. I wrote a note here. I think this could have been released as part of the Parade project as a story about Mrs. Wellington or one of his older ladies.
Oh, sure. You know what? That's really well said. It definitely could be.
Yeah.
It definitely
so I think that, yeah. that guy could have fit in somewhere there. And I really love the stabs. Like the way he has, I want to talk about the production of this at some point because it's a little mixed. There's a little bit of mixed feelings about some of the production value of the album. And we'll hit it maybe as we get it a little further down the road in the album. But there's some amazing blasts of rhythm guitar and bass that just pop out of the sound. Like it's so high in the mix and it just bangs and hits you in the head. It's in a great way. Like I'm not complaining about it here, but it's really like around the 4 minute mark, there's like he does the now dance section and there's like bass and rhythm. And it's just blasting. I could listen to that for 20 minutes straight.
Totally. Yeah, I agree. Stuff.
So no, I'm with you. I think this is a very fun, light, fun, tight track.
Yes, agreed. Totally. Great. Well, let's move on then to track number three on Musicology. This is titled A Million Days. So you've been in all since you left me, but it feels like a million days. If I had
had a magic wand that could turn back time. I'd never let you go.
All right, Ed, here we go. I know everyone knows that you're a bit of a math whiz.
True.
True. So if I were to ask you,
37,
without looking it up, how many years constitutes a million days? What would your ballpark guess be?
250 years?
No.
That's not even close.
It's not even close. It's not even close.
No, that's ridiculous, dude. I was bad. 265,000 years?
That's too many.
Ah, shit. I was close, though. It's close. I mean,
but it's 2,739 years. So that's how many years constitutes a million days.
All right. There it is.
So now you have that information at your ready.
If anyone ever asks you that question.
You never know when it might come up. What do you think of this track, A Million Days?
Interesting track to me. It's our first taste of guitar.
Yep.
Right. A little bit of guitar. You know, it's funny. I feel like this is custom made for radio. I'm surprised he didn't release this as a single.
I agree. I totally agree with you. It really feels like it should be.
Yeah. And I'm not saying it's like my favorite song. I don't even know if it's my favorite song on this album, but it just almost reeks of radio friendly. A lot of people would have liked the song and played it and would have been a big hit for him. I really feel that way about it.
Yeah.
I think it would have been a better follow up to Musicology than, I love Call My Name. I'm thinking the Cinnamon Girl. If I could flip Cinnamon Girl out and put this in, I certainly would have in terms of the singles he released. There's a nice bass that kind of builds like a bottom bass drum in the second verse, right? It's very, airy in the beginning, but then the bass comes kind of in that really supports the song. Plunky bass, which is really there in the mix. But it's interesting, and again, about the production of this. A lot of the instruments to me are low in the mix. He's really propping up vocals, it seems to me. I don't know if you feel the same way in this album in general. Like he seems to be way more interested in his lead vocal and the harmonies than the instrumentation below. And there's quite a distance between the two when I'm listening to this. I don't know if I'd love to hear your thoughts. You have a good ear for that stuff. I mean, the harmonies are gorgeous, so I get why. And I think some of the lyrics here are kind of nice too. Some of his most straightforward, great lyrics. Like, I could tolerate the pain if I could talk to my best friend, but you won't even call, which I think is a nice little line. I also like, you're the perfect picture of what love should look like, and I want to be your frame, which I think is another great line. I think he could have made this a little bit more guitar oriented. I would have preferred if he did, and probably maybe amped up the idea of the guitar. I just, again, don't understand why it's so low in the mix here. Even the solo seems a little low in the mix to me. And I got to give props to Prince for this. I'm listening to this track, realizing this is the era of John Blackwell. I'm thinking, oh, finally we have a track with John Blackwell in it. No, it's just still all Prince playing every instrument. I really thought this was Blackwell on drums. So total tip of the hat to Prince there. And what's interesting is as I'm listening, I don't know if you have the same feeling, the tones and the different quality, because, he can't resist having a Renaissance sounding riff in the middle of a song and does it a couple times on this album. It sounded to me like a mishmash of sounds from Diamonds and Pearls and Emancipation. So I was really tickled to find that purportedly this was recorded back in 96. So it's around that Emancipation era. Where this was recorded.
Right.
And it also feels a little bit like a descendant of 17 Days, the track, in some respects.
Oh, I think it is a relative of 17 Days. Yeah,
absolutely. So, I mean, I appreciate the song. It's not a favorite. I appreciate it. And when it comes on, I'm like, oh, this could have been his radio. I mean, every time this comes on, I'm like, this could have been a hit for him.
Yeah.
But it's not a personal favorite of mine, but I could see where other people would really, really like it. And maybe you're one of those people, Jared. What do you say?
Well, I do like it. I like it a lot. I don't know that I don't think I disagree with you, though. Like it's not my favorite track on this record, but I definitely feel like it could have been successful as a single. I definitely agree with that. Something I like about this, and Prince has a unique little sort of subgenre that he has, which are sort of these love songs that are songs of desperation.
Yeah.
Of like this real yearning. And I think this slots in really well in that little subgenre, and I think it is effective. I think the metaphor of a million days, at one point in the toward the last verse, he says 100,000 million days. You know, it's yeah. a nice metaphor of yeah. for desperation and wanting and need yeah. and all of that. I like that a lot. And, you know, I agree with you, too, though. It does feel like the instrumentation is all a little low in the mix. And I was wondering, I don't know if this is correct at all, but I was wondering if this is partially in reaction to News and Expectation, where there was no vocal at all. So he's popping up. He's popping the vocal a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, you might remember on the News pod, I talked about how we miss that instrument that is his voice.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that was a conscious decision.
Yeah.
You know, well, we know that they all were, right? Everything he did was conscious. What the reasons for them were is what we speculate on. But that was my take on that maybe he was trying to respond to the people who are like, I don't want to listen to it if you're not going to sing. You know, the mix aside, I do like the guitar tone a lot. I like when he has in my musical eye in my head, the tone sort of wide, it's sort of got a wide sound to me. And I like that.
Yeah.
It feels expansive in that way, which I guess a million days would be expansive.
Yeah. You think, right.
Yeah.
How many years would that be altogether?
2,700 years, give or take.
Oh, okay. Give or take 27. Okay. Sounds fair.
Give or take 2,700. So yeah, those are my thoughts in a million days, but I agree with you. I think this could have been a single and a successful one. Yeah.
I think it would have been.
Yeah. I agree.
All right. Cool. Anyway. Well, let's move on. Let's move on to something that, I mean, I've certainly heard Jared describe this way various times. Life of the Party. Jared, is there one epic celebration / party outside of your wedding? I'm not going to give you that. That's a throw. If you just say, oh, my wedding was the best party I was at. It's. Outside of that, that you can think of in your life that you're like, wow, that was one of those memorable once in a lifetime, just great parties.
Wow, that is a good question. I feel like so often parties end in some kind of disaster.
We've seen too many 80s movies, right?
We've seen too many 80s movies. I certainly have some really good memories of like some really, I mean, maybe it's a bit cliche, but some like epic New Year's Eve parties, like when in my early 20s that like
good
some
for you.
Were really, really fun.
That's great.
And there were also some that weren't. I have very vivid memories of ones that weren't as well. You know, in truth, and Ned, you know this about me. If I have my druthers every New Year's Eve, since I brought that up, I prefer to go to a concert.
Sure. I can see that for you.
That's the best way to spend New Year's Eve is dancing around with people listening to music. And in fact, we might be going, we have to discuss this. We'll discuss it off air, but we might be going to see Earth, Wind & Fire on New Year's Eve this year.
Right. We were talking about that. Yeah.
We were talking about that.
And folks, if you're not seeing Earth, Wind & Fire, you're probably going to see Johnny Showcase in Philadelphia for New Year's Eve. So keep your eyes out for that.
That's right. Johnny Showcase.
Our good friend, Johnny Showcase. It's funny you say that because typically for me, New Year's Eve are always a bust. I had a couple, maybe one or two fun New Year's Eves, but typically it's like, I've found, and this is maybe in somewhat in spirit of the song, the parties I've enjoyed the most are the ones I've hosted.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah.
What do you think about this song?
Well, it's okay. I don't think I certainly disagree with that assessment in one of the reviews. It says it's as concise and as winning as his early 80s. Like, there's no way.
I don't know about that at all.
To me, what I don't know if you felt this way, and I just sort of, I don't know if you heard it. I just played a little snippet of it to make sure I was thinking of the right thing. Actually, the rhythm is very New Jack swingy to me. You know, it feels like 90s, early 90s stuff. And, you know, it's not bad, but it's not, I mean, it's not great. You know, it's fine. I think it's a fine, like, let's get in the groove and have a good night kind of song. But like, if I had to pick a song like that from Prince's catalog, I'd be picking It's Gonna Be a Beautiful Night, not Life of the Party.
I think I'd pick every other possible song. Except Jughead, possibly.
Wow, you hate this that much?
I don't like this song.
Oh wait, let me give you the floor. Okay. I want to hear about this.
I mean, my first note was God, I don't like this song. I mean, from the first sung line, I don't like it. Okay, I find the key, the piano that he's playing, and it's off key a little bit annoying through the whole song. I don't like his rap. I don't think Prince's rap here is particularly good. The chorus sounds like a Nasty Girl ripoff chorus. It sounds almost in the similar style as Nasty Girl, but just not as inspired and as funky. I'll give props to Candy, because I did not think she was the vocalist here. I thought it was probably Rosie, Shelby, like somebody who's like, so I give her props because I didn't think it was her. So I'll give her that. And the horns are so simple. There's nothing to the horn line. There's nothing there. I mean, honestly, I know this is going to sound severe. This is maybe a half a star better than Jughead to me. Like, I do not like this song.
Wow.
I wrote, I'm not finding a lot of life in this attempt to party. Like, I just don't dig this song.
I I'm not a fan of it, but, wow, man, that is tough. That is,
to be honest. Hey, listen, if I'm not being honest to our people out there, our listeners.
No, you got to be honest. I appreciate the honesty. You know, I'm here for it, but I'm just a little like, that's a little stunning. That's a stunning indictment of Life of the Party.
Well, for sure, folks who are on the Facebook page, we're definitely going to get your notes on. I'm going to pose a question about this particular track because I want to hear how wrong maybe I am about this, but I just do not like the song.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Let's move on. I love it. Let's move on to track number 5 on Musicology. This is titled, this is one of the singles, of course. This is titled Call My Name.
Call my name.
Yes, I do.
Heard a voice on the news saying people want to stop the war. Stop the war. If they had a love as sweet as you, they'd forget what they were fighting for.
And now, let me ask you this question. What is the best song that has call in the title? Like Call Me, Blondie, for example. There's a song called Calling Out to You. Is there a song, there's a band called The Call? There used to be a band called The Call, I think. Wasn't there a band called The Call from the 80s?
I'm not sure. It's so funny. I'm just so not thinking. Besides Call Me, that's popped in my head right away. I can't even...
Let's see. Songs with call
and title.
In the title. Best songs with call. Oh, Call Me Maybe.
That's a great little track. It's you can't deny that's irresistible little track.
Another song called Call Me. Call My Name. You Can Call Me Al. I Call Your Name. I guess that's why they call it the blues. Call Your Girlfriend. London Calling. Whenever I Call You Friend.
Oh, that's a great little. I think that's a really good song, by the way.
I Call Your Name.
Whenever I Call You Friend by
whenever
Loggins.
I Call You Friend.
And, and by the way, we'll link that into Prince because uncredited guest vocal, that's a Kenny Loggins track, right?
Right.
Is Stevie Nicks, I believe.
I think that's right. Yeah. I think that's right.
There we go. We brought it home.
We brought it home. Yeah.
What of those, the most interesting one would be Call Me Al, because I never quite understood the. It was a catchy little tune, but I never
Call Me Betty. And I can call you Betty and you can call me Al.
Yeah,
that's tough to parse. And the other thing, there's another song on this list here, A Town Called Malice. Do you remember that song by The Jam?
No.
Town Called Malice.
No.
That's a good song.
Okay.
That's a good song. What do you think of this, Call My Name?
Polar opposite of the last song.
Yeah.
From the first sung line, I'm hooked. But when he comes in with saying call my name, he just says those three words. I'm like, oh my God, I'm in. I am all in on this. And, you know, this old school Al Greenish 70s soul, I mean, done with tons of skill. He's delivering here on his treatise in the beginning about musicology. Like, this is him saying, you want some real music, guys? This is what real soul sounds like. And I mean, listen, we've said it a billion times, maybe a million times, or 2,000 times. 365 times that this guy can sing, man. And to your point about missing his vocal on the last album with News, like, he's smart enough on these ballads to give his voice enough space to shine, right? He's so good at just adding a little accent here and a touch of it there. His vocal here is just stunning, I think.
It is. It's beautiful.
And there's a sophistication to the chord progressions here that are like that. Those run lines right before the chorus are so good. You know, I think there might be like three key changes as he's leading up to the chorus, as he's running through that. Like, it's just, it's amazing. I just think it's so well done. And lyrically, I love the last section he sings. I get a little, when he starts talking about the moon. I don't know why that hits me as hard as it does. First of all, when he says, he talks about the moon, and then there's an isolated bass pick. Like, it just, there's a big spot, like the moonlight's shining on that bass. And there's just a barrel, 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 right? And then when he says that run of that lines, I've never seen the moon look so lovely as the night I saw it with you. Let me know I've never seen the moon before. That's just crushingly beautiful lyric. I love that lyric. It's great.
It's beautiful. I had the same note.
Yeah. And you know, nothing about you is false. That's why your love is real. I love that line. I love when he kind of gets funked out a little bit with gonna break the law around here. Like, we gets a little like, he's going to get a little nasty about it, which there is not a false anything in this song. Like, it's done so well. And, you know, I remember, this is a few years after, I'm going to reference this song more than once here, D'Angelo's How Does It Feel? Untitled, which was a huge hit, deservedly. I love that track, and I love D'Angelo. Right. I love Voodoo.
D'Angelo. Yeah,
love
big D'Angelo fans.
Yeah, we're on record for that. Now, he said he was inspired by Prince. Like, he was like, I'm going to write a song like Prince would write a slow song, right?
Right.
And I kind of feel like Prince took that song Untitled and said, hey, D, thanks for that song. I'm going to provide you with some more inspiration to write some other good slow songs. I'm going to write you this song, dude. Like, it feels like it was a little like a response song a little bit to me. Like, let me show you how I can take this again and show you how to do it, which I think is great. So I just endlessly love this track. I think it's such a great solid. I don't know if it's my favorite ballad of his of all time, but it's pretty high up there. Like, I think it's a really well done song. What about you?
Oh yeah, I'm a fan of Call My Name. It definitely feels it's definitely an Al Green 70s throwback. It smells like smoke. It smells like wood
there
fire.
There you go,
smoke.
The smell.
That's what it is. It smells like wood fire smoke.
Yeah.
And I really agree with you about the lyrics about the moon. I also love in the chorus the very simple line of "I just can't stop writing songs about you."
Yeah, that's a great line. So
great.
Good.
Oh, it's great. It's just so good. And his vocals in fine form. And this is, I think, some of his best bass work in quite a while.
Yeah, it's really good.
You know, he's had Rhonda Smith playing the bass for him those last couple records and stuff. But him that, to your point, those plucked bass, it's so funky.
Yeah.
And it's this great little bit of funk in the middle of this tender, tender ballad that's really lovely. So, yeah, Call My Name is this is a solid, solid ballad. Is it, you know, top tier Prince ballad? I don't know. That's interesting. That's an interesting debate. I mean, maybe it's in the top 10. I don't think it's in the top 5, but it might get into the top 10. But it's a really solid, well-constructed, as you said, nothing false in it ballad. So I'm here for Call My Name. This is a good track. It's good.
Yeah, and again, the thing that makes it extra special for me within the context of this album is it's him delivering on what he talks about at the title track.
Right.
You know, so there you go. All right, why don't we move on? So the next one is called Cinnamon Girl. We don't talk about spice enough in this podcast. I think
we don't.
That's one of the main criticisms we've been hearing from folks.
We've been hearing a lot, not enough talk about spices, seasonings, and considering we just all had a huge meal, we should have our spice episode ready to go for the Christmas holidays.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you think the reason there was not as much longevity as you would hope from the Spice Girls was because there was not a girl named Cinnamon involved in the Spice Girl setup?
I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, I think that's one. If they had a Cinnamon Girl, they'd still be touring today. Yeah. They'd be as important today as they were for the 3 minutes that they were important in 1998.
We'd probably be doing a whole different podcast series if this.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Say no more. All right. So, what do you think about this particular track, Cinnamon Girl?
Well, you know, it's funny. I want to just say this and get this out of the way. When I first got musicology back in the day, whenever I see the title Cinnamon Girl, I think of the Neil Young song.
You know what? Remind me of that, because I know there is a song out there. What's that like? Can I describe it a little bit?
It's a real heavy guitar riff. Dun, 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 dun. I want to live with my cinnamon girl.
Okay.
I could be happy. It's a great song, and it's really aggressive. And, you know, they called Neil Young, of course, the godfather of grunge. Cinnamon Girl is a very grungy sounding song.
Gotcha.
And so, and I'm a big Neil Young fan. So the first few times I listened to this, I'm like, why isn't this should be sounding like something else.
Right. You want it to sound like something else.
I think Cinnamon Girl is a very charming but minor pop song. You know, it's lovely. It's a fluff track. It's fluff. And I'm not knocking it for that. I mean, I don't dislike it. You know, I enjoy hearing it when I realize it's not Neil Young Cinnamon Girl all these years later. But yeah. I think it's a charming enough song that is very trite in the end. Mm. And I think I understand why it was chosen as a single. It's got a very poppy sort of sound to it. Sounds radio friendly. I don't know. I don't dislike it, but it's not, it doesn't hold my attention the way maybe you would hope it would as a single. What do you think of Cinnamon Girl?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I thought you might've liked it a little bit more than you just described, but I totally get, like, if you have a different song in your head, every time you come in to listen to a song and it's not quite what you're thinking, it makes it hard. But I wrote down, like, this reminds me, and at this point in his career, I'm going to, of course, start referencing other songs from the past. Like, so for this one, this is reminds me of Dolphin. Or perhaps his cover of One of Us from Emancipation.
Oh, interesting.
I think the production of it sounds very similar to me. And if you recall from, you know, my reviews of those songs, I don't particularly like those types of Prince songs. I can appreciate them for how they're crafted, how they're executed, those guitar pop songs like that. But it's just not one that curls my hair. Like, it just doesn't quite do it for me for whatever reason. And again, like, this is a guitar oriented song, but again, he kind of, again, is burying it a bit, right? Like, he doesn't want the guitar to pop too much. It's like constrained in some fashion, in some way, more controlled. And I'm like, why? Like, you know, why are the keys and the keyboards and the harmonies higher in the mix, even during the guitar solo on this? I don't get it. But like, so that's the thing. I mean, I do think the topic here, go back to 2004. We are only a few years after 9/11. I think the content here is brave.
Like, I agree. I want to say, I realized as you were speaking that I was sort of shortchanging the lyrical content. I do think the lyrics are pretty great. Yeah. But anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. And I didn't think that you were like, oh, the lyrics, whatever. But like, I do give him certainly points. You would not hear anything on the radio close to having a prejudice about Muslims or like, I don't think you're going to. I can't remember any other tracks at that time period that even hinted at that stuff. So for a pop song, like for him to get them to release this song to be somewhat like pro-Muslim or whatever, 3 years after 9/11, we're at war in Iraq. Like I got to give him credit for that. But to your point, like in terms of a song that I'm like, how many times have I listened to it since 2004? Three or four times, maybe. You know.
Well, this is an issue, I think, that we haven't tackled for a little while, but we've discussed it in previous records, wherein the music is belying what the lyrical content is.
Yes.
And I think in this instance, in a negative way, the music makes it seem triter than it is, in my opinion. Like, so, for example, just to go to the lyrics for a second, I actually like he has this lyric. I think it's so on the money. So began the mass illusion. War on terror alibi. What's the use when the god of confusion keeps on telling the same lie?
Yeah.
That's as political a lyric as he ever wrote.
Yeah.
It's just the problem is that the music is not, I want the music to be, I don't know. I want it to grab me more than it does.
I'm with you. And I felt my good friend Terrence Trent D'Arby had a similar issue sometimes. He would write, I mean, this is sincerely, I'm a big
TTD.
Fan. Yeah, TTD. Like he would write like kind of, what was, you know, thought provoking lyrics, but like in like either a pop environment or pop structure or even a dance structure. And they would just pass through you because it just didn't feel like it matched the tone of the music at all. And that's why, exactly. Like, I think a song like Avalanche, the tone of the song and the way he delivers it is right on the money with what the message he's trying to get across. This is like, it's a pop song, but it's about this. So I'm with you. I think in general, when artists have this sort of mismatch, it loses effectiveness, right? It's like, I think I could see them be like, oh, well, people will be more open to hearing about it because the music's more accessible. But right. Then you don't even think about the lyrics, right? Because you're the song's right. Catchy, whatever. I'm not even thinking about the lyrics.
Because all you're thinking about is Cinnamon Girl.
Yeah.
That's what you're thinking about. Yeah. As opposed to, and that's catchy. It's right. It's a little bit of an earworm, but right. it is undercutting his own lyrical content. And I think too, not to get ahead of it, but later on in this album, I think there's actually a pretty effective political song
that
matches its musical tone, and so anyway.
Can we agree to call it the Hey Ya when that happens? Because I mean,
sure.
Outkast brilliantly even called it out within Hey Ya that you're not going to be listening to the lyrics I'm writing because it's a dance song.
Right.
And you called it no one knows that song's about like people breaking up and there's never going to be a true love.
Right.
That's what he's talking about in there, but he calls it out. Right. He's
I like, completely
you're
not agree.
Want to listen to that. You just want to dance. Right.
Yeah, that's right. I agree.
So, anyway.
Well, very good. Well, let us move on then to track number 7 on Musicology. This is titled, What Do You Want Me to Do?
Shame on you, baby. Can't you see this rain? What do you want me to do, girl? What do you want me to do, babe? What do you want me to do, girl? What do you want me to do, babe? I got a woman.
Ed, has there been anything that you've asked me to do that I haven't done? This is your moment to air your grievances right now. Is there anything that you want me to do that I haven't done for you?
I just want you to be true to yourself.
That's tough. I'm doing the best I can. That's a struggle every day. What do you think of What Do You Want Me to Do?
I don't know. This is a tough one. It starts off with such an interesting drum machine work. Like the drum pattern on here is really interesting and kind of cool. I don't know. And there's like a couple songs in this catalog that have this drum. We're going to talk about one very shortly. I forget which one of the digital release albums we'll be talking about shortly, called Underneath the Cream, has a very similar vibe. But I think it's a more successful song. There's something about the verses here that it just doesn't, they don't lift the song for me. Like I like the drum and the bass below the foundation of it, but the stuff on top, I wrote this note, but I don't know what state of mind I was in. I wrote, it's kind of like a great Bundt cake foundation, but like there's rum raisin and sour cream on top. Like I can't quite get the cake's good, but the stuff on top, I'm like,
Right.
I don't know. Like I just, it doesn't have the wallop. I feel like the impact it could have because there's something about the way he's singing the verses that just doesn't quite do it for me. There's one lyrical run here that I find very interesting. I don't know if you picked it out too.
Is it the beheaded one?
Yes.
That's
like, honey, you're trying. So guys, for folks, you'll go and listen to this album if you haven't already. I mean, basically the idea of the song is, hey, you noticed me. Maybe it's because I'm a rock star guitar player, whatever. I have a woman, you have a man, we shouldn't get together. But then there's a line where he says, literally, I got a woman, you got a man, so we got to do what's right. I said, you'd be beheaded in other lands if you were in my arms tonight. What a wonderful conversation that must have been at the club or wherever they were hanging out when he brought that up to this person.
That's a tough way for a little fling to end with a beheading. Woo!
I think that would put the brakes on pretty fast. I guess I'll have to try that with someone just to see how far it goes.
Sure. Yeah, we'll try
But anyway, the one thing I did find interesting because I was just curious was there's this Italian stuff at the back end. Did you notice this?
Yes. Yeah, I did.
You look it up at all or try to find out?
I didn't. I figured you would. So
yeah, I did. I gave us a quick look. So at the end of the song, folks, In fact, I think there's a child. Like, it's a weird. There's a child or something, and then someone's speaking in a foreign language. I didn't even know what language it was. I just searched to try to find it, and it's Italian. I don't know if you caught that from your when you were listening to it, but basically the translation is this: "Don't worry about me. I'm fine. Even if I'm without him, I came alone to this world. I came this way, but I don't want to leave him. Why? Why men don't love us women as we deserve?"
Huh. Interesting.
I don't know. In the context of the song, I'm not exactly sure, but
yeah, because, sometimes. Yeah, that's interesting because the song, you know, we certainly know that our guy here can take on the perspective, the female perspective, and take it on very well.
Yeah.
But tacking it on at the end of the song in Italian, I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think so. I sort of like this song. Okay. Actually. Okay. Now I'm going to say something that's going to sound really, really insane. So I just want you to bear with me because I can imagine your response when I say this. It kind of reminds me of Stevie Wonder. It reminds me of that golden period of Stevie Wonder from, like, you know, 72 to 77, all those great records. It feels like it could sort of slot into there. Of course, what I was thinking about in particular was "You've Got a Bad Girl."
Oh, okay.
Right. There's a and I think the reason I'm feeling that is that there is a similarity in the vocal rhythm of those two tracks, and that they end, you know, their sort of choruses end with the word "girl" in the same way.
Mm.
It just was really striking to me. So what I'll say is that I enjoy, there's something about the rise and the fall of the rhythm that's appealing to my ear. The da 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 da.
Yeah.
This sweet little rise and fall of it, like you're tumbling down the stairs, like something's tinkling down the stairs, and that appeals to my ear. I completely agree that lyric is very, that one lyric, it just throws the whole thing out of whack.
Yeah.
But it's a charming, to me, this song is more charming than maybe it's given credit for. I don't know that it's a big re-listen. I'm happy to have it on when the album plays through, but I don't go seeking out "What Do You Want Me to Do?"
Yeah.
But it's a charmer. And I think there's some lovely little things in it. So
I'm going to just add this really quick, because I looked this up really quickly. So maybe it's Italian because his wife at the time was half Italian.
Oh, well, that would make sense. Yeah, that would make
sense.
There
you go.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Let's move on. Speaking of wives, let's talk about the next song called "The Marrying Kind." She's gonna miss you at first, but then she's gonna buy me things. That's when I'm gonna lay across my piano stool. Would you agree, Jared, that the best mental state to be in is you should be marrying kind? Or do you think there's another state there that you should be marrying?
I think kindness is a good mental state to have, for sure. Yeah, this is a tough metaphor you're going with.
It was a minor stretch.
That should be the name of a band. Minor Stretch is a good band name.
It's absolutely. Yeah,
that's a good one. Yeah.
What do you think about this one?
Well, you know what? I'm going to just sort of lay my cards out on the table and say this is without question my least favorite track on the album. By like a big stretch.
Okay. Not by a minor stretch.
Major not stretch. By a minor stretch. No, no, no. They're looking for their debut record coming out soon. No, I think, I don't know. It just feels, sometimes he pulls out a melody, a sort of minor chords, and it just sounds, I don't know, is the word aggressive?
Hmm.
Or I'm not sure what the word is, but whatever the tone is, I just find it a little unpleasant.
Mm.
It doesn't feel melodic in the way that I want it to be.
Okay.
I don't know if that's because he was trying to, because, you know, the narrative of this song is him talking to a buddy, right? Like he's talking to a buddy about talking to a buddy and the woman that the buddy's involved with, I think, saying that this is a mistake. That he shouldn't have left you, and I don't know.
Yeah.
It just does. I don't know. What I'm feeling, I'm not being articulate about it at all, and I apologize for that.
It just
doesn't work for me.
No, sometimes that's the bottom line. Right?
That's the bottom line. Like it just doesn't work. What do you think? Am I missing?
No. I don't think you're off. I don't think you're super off on this one. I mean, the one thing I was like, okay, when the song started, and again, we're gonna have a similar kind of take in terms of the arrangement with the next song as well. So I think we might agree that there's two different success levels here.
100%.
But like, but I was like, okay, cool. He's using the band now. Like this one has a band feel to it, which I kind of dig, right? Like it feels like he's using a whole band here, not like one man show doing it. Or boy, nice to talk about not being articulate. I don't know what I just said there. But anyway, you know, that she's going to miss you, that line, like I'm like, oh, this sounds like this could be a nice hook if it kind of gets played out a different way, but it never really was. It didn't really get explored enough. But I'm with you, like for the chorus and stuff, there's like carnival sounding keyboard line, which I actually found grating, like kind of like not pleasant to listen to. And like he's gonna put her on the same diet Missy's on. I don't know. Like, and then like I kind of get, I know, and I, you know, I'm not a fan of these, but like he gets, I don't know if it's an instinct or like, I don't know where to go with the song, but when he does these sort of renaissance-y, classical music-y runs, which he does here again, to just kind of bridge some sections together, I'm just like, I just lose interest so quickly. So I mean, my least favorite, it'd be close. I'm not sure if it is, but it's certainly not a song that I like.
Well, and you know what part of it is for me too, upon further reflection, as I try to be more articulate about this, is that for one, the guitar riff sounds kind of like metal. It's like a metal sound. It's like a, you know, like some kind of, I mean, bear with me as I say this, but like a Metallica kind of riff, like this heavy distortion.
Yeah.
Or you know, these low chords. I don't know. It just feels wrong. And then I got to say too, like lyrically, when he's like, let me read some of these lyrics. What is this? The second verse, the third verse, he says, I'm going to put her on the same diet Missy went on.
Yeah, I was just saying that. Yeah.
You're right. You said that. You know she eat too much. Tonight she's going to miss you at first, but then she'll get used to me. Yeah. All of the tricks I would try to make her take this ring and make love to me. And that sounds a little assaulty, a little bit.
I mean, there's some countries where he'd be beheaded for that.
There'd be some countries we'd be headed for that. I mean, it sounds like it sounds
dickish
at the minimum.
Yeah.
A little date rapey and another, you know, if you want to be a little just, more extreme.
Yeah, it's not a pleasant.
And I know that too. I know he's never, that's not what his thing was, but it just something about the lyrics combined with the aggression in that guitar riff really throw me off. I'm just not, it just doesn't work for me. Right. So let us just move on then. From a song from this one to into one it really bleeds into, as we said, they're edited together.
Yeah.
And so this next track, which is track number, what is it? Eight or seven, nine rather. Excuse me. This is track number nine. This is If I Was the Man in Your Life. Now, Ed, we all know that I am the man in your life.
Yes.
I know you've just sort of become accustomed to it. Do you feel like things have gotten stale between us? Do we need to spice things up? Going back to spices, are you bored? What do you need?
I mean, you know,
if I was the man in your life,
yeah, you know, maybe take me out to a nice show once in a while would be all right.
Yeah. A nice show, a little song and dance.
Why do we always stay in all the time?
Why do we always
go out? Are you embarrassed to be seen with me in public or something?
I didn't say it. what do you make of this? If I was the man in your life.
So the song starts and I'm like, okay, this has some promise. And you know, it's very similar. It's so funny in the style of the opening of the previous song, but there's a little more energy packed in this one as it comes in. And it's so funny because, and guys, you'll notice from listening to the song, like it's this sort of like real quick, like syncopated full band coming in on the lyric with stops and little breaks of silence. And it kind of rolls through. And as he goes through that first lyric and it stops and he goes, there's so much confidence in that. Like to me, I interpret that like, you guys see how fucking cool this I can be with this fucking song. Like from that first couple, like 30 seconds, I'm like, he's so confident in the material at this, with this particular song. And that's how I interpret that, that just that little guttural sound that he includes. I love it. And it just immediately sounds more successful than the Marrying Kind. Like from that moment on, like it just does. And his verses are relentless. They have this kind of Beyonce Destiny's Child kind of running quality to them. And I think he pulls it off well. Like it rolls so well, so rhythmic. And I like it, so, but I have to say, I love it in sections. I love the first three quarters of the song. And then guess what he does, folks, for Ed, not that he did it for Ed, but in my ears, does his Renaissance thing again. And then he does, and I thought of you, Jared, because of I forget what other song we were talking about recently where you mentioned this. I felt like he was like, okay, where does this song go? Well, I'll just do a jazz outro. Like, it felt like I don't know. Let's just do a jazz outro. So I felt like that was just sort of a thrown together out, like nothing for, didn't do anything particularly for the song. It's just like, he didn't know what to do to end it. So it wasn't, I don't love the jazz riff at the end. So I have to say but he does do this. There's a little guitar riff that comes up towards the end as it's starting to fade out. And I'm kind of like, oh, I could listen to that though. I could listen to that for a little longer.
Right, right. Yeah.
I could, but he does, and he kills it. Like it goes off and it's done. Yeah. But so it's first three quarters, love. Last quarter, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah. I agree with you. I definitely feel it's more successful than the Marrying Kind. This also certainly feels like lyrically it is. I guess, are these the tricks he's using to try to get her into bed? I mean, like, it seems like he's now embodying that character.
Right.
And he's engaging in that. I will say, if nothing else, the Sixers get name checked.
They do.
The Sixers, we have the lyric. He liked the Sixers, but the Sixers on when he came. So nice to hear our Philadelphia 76ers.
Go 76ers.
Out, which is pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I agree with you. It is a piece that's ultimately sort of pastiched. It's a little bit stuck together, you know, different kinds of things. Although the aggression of the previous track, The Marrying Kind, is still present here, it somehow feels mitigated. I don't know if it's the melody that mitigates it. It might be that, or it might be, you know, there's that constant little piano riff of the ding, 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 ding. That might be lightening it for me a little bit. But I agree with you. Like it's still kind of a mess. It still kind of goes all over the place. But I don't dislike it. You know, I it's a big improvement for me over the Marrying Kind. So I don't know. I feel like this is what I need to think about more.
Okay.
And piece together a little bit.
Well, get back to us. Just let us know when you have time. Just let us know when you have time. You want to play. We'll circle back.
A solo pod on just this track.
Let's do a bonus pod just on this track. I think it'd be fine.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to the next track. This one is called On the Couch.
I want to go down.
Jared, would you agree that the couch is the most important piece of furniture in any given house?
Oh, man. You know, more than the dining table? I guess it is.
I'm asking you the question, my friend.
Yeah, you're asking me. I guess so. Let me ask you this.
Sure, please.
Is it couch or sofa?
Oh.
Is there a difference between a couch and a sofa?
That's a great question. What's the difference between a couch and a sofa?
I don't know. I don't know if there is a difference.
Guys, please help us with this. Couch versus sofa.
Couch versus sofa. That's the name of the band that's opening for Minor Stretch. Couch versus sofa.
I love it.
This song, I like On the Couch. I like it. I think it's funny. it's got, first of all, because it's sort of when it starts off, you feel like it's this another sort of seduction kind of. It's certainly got that melody, that feel, you know, Love Jones is on the TV again, baby, which I think is a pretty funny line. Love Jones recently reissued by the Criterion Collection, I just heard, by the way.
I listen, I'm going to be very honest. I think I was confusing Love Jones with Star Jones. I thought it was a person that someone was on the TV. I just recently looked that up just to double check before we did the pod and said, oh, that's a movie. That's
actually Love Jones the movie. Yeah.
I'm going to watch because it sounds pretty interesting. The reviews would be cool for it. But
yeah. So for me, and this is, I mean, and On the Couch is pretty tight. This isn't a very long track.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's really great that we're having this build up, like, hey, baby, let's come on. Let's just do this thing. Don't make me cry. Don't make me stay. We're tossing and turning. I know we agreed. I know. All these sorts of stuff, and then to end with, please don't make me sleep on the couch. Oh, I think it's pretty funny. Okay. You know, here's, we have this world class seducer, and he's doing everything he can, and it's not working. It's still not working.
I love it.
I love it.
Yeah.
Don't make me sleep on the couch. So I think I get a kick out of On the Couch. This is a good track. I like it. So
let me add some important information here. So the term couch.
Oh yeah, let's hear it. You looked it up.
Yeah. Believed to be derived from the French word couche, couche, okay. Whatever. It's a piece of furniture with no arms.
Ah.
Used for lying.
Okay.
If you're going to start throwing some falsitude dudes out, just make sure you're on a couch. On the other hand, sofa is a long seat, usually with arms and a back, and often could be converted into a bed.
Oh, interesting. So the difference is, a couch doesn't have arms or a back, or does it have a back sometimes? It doesn't say.
It doesn't specifically say it does or doesn't have a back, but it definitely says it has no arms.
It has no arms, but a sofa has arms.
Yep.
Now we know.
There it is.
I never knew that once in my entire life till just this moment.
You're welcome, everybody out there in listener land.
That's what, listen, this is the service we provide here at When Doves Podcast.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do it. This song, let me tell you, I adore this little track. Now I, before name check D'Angelo, I'm going to do it even more here on this track, because honestly, if you would go back and listen to the very beginning of this, it sounds like How Does It Feel?
Yeah.
Almost to it, note for note, beat to beat sounds like How Does It Feel? Right. And then it just shows you what you can do with just, I don't know if it's a Hammond or a Rhodes. I'm not sure who's playing the keys. I think it's Prince, but like just holding a chord low in the mix with some rhythm kicking below, on top of it, add some real horns. It's so good. Like, it's so good. I'm so glad he didn't decide to put some other like sparkly little keyboard feels in here. Like, it's all real, like horn playing, the Hammond, the drum, right? There's these little guitar runs. They're big and they're fat. Like, they're just big, fat sounds. And they're so good. Right. And to your point, I think you were saying this in various ways. This is probably the sexiest, funny song that Prince has ever written.
Yes.
You know, and like, what would you call the style? Like, is it like 60s era, like please, please, please me, like kind of James Brownie kind of
like early soul
or early soul, right?
Yeah.
And like, to me, there's just not a misplaced anything on this track. Right. There's a moment at the 2 minute mark where he starts to go down. Don't leave me, like you talk about the desperation he can bring into a song, right? Like A Million Days. You talk about that longing, that feeling where he starts desperately talking about, don't leave me without your kiss. He says it on the lead vocal. The sax repeats it. Then the backing vocal repeats the line. And then a muted trumpet repeats the, like, it's just geniusly put together. And this is such a short little song, and it's funny, but it's so well constructed and so well arranged. Yes. And just to say, again, to throw back to D'Angelo, to me, it's like Prince was winking at him here and saying, you know how that Untitled song was the huge song for you? Like, this became a career defining song for you. I can write that kind of song, D'Angelo, keep the sex in it and add a layer of humor you'd never find.
That's right.
Drop the mic. Like that's how I feel about this track.
That is an excellent point you're making, because as much as we love D'Angelo and we love him, the dude ain't funny. That's not his
I've never seen any. I don't recall in any of his albums like any humor.
No, he's not a funny guy. Yeah. He's not. That's not his thing.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. Oh, interesting. Well said. Very good. All right. Well, let's move on to track the penultimate track.
Oh, I know what that means.
You know what that means. This is track number 11 on Musicology. This is titled "Dear Mr. Man."
Maybe we should write a letter. Said, "Dear Mr. Man, we don't understand why poor people keep struggling, but you don't lend a helping hand." Matthew 5:5 saying, "The meek shall inherit the earth." We wanna be down that way.
Ed, were you a fan of Mr. Mister?
Carrie LA, my friend. The Road We Must Travel.
The Road We Must Travel. What was their other hit?
They Broken Wing, hit. Baby. I was on the top of I knew it. I knew you were going to ask.
Yeah, that's it.
I feel like we had this conversation for some reason a while back when I was visiting you in Philly, where we're, I don't know why Mr. Mister came up and we're talking about, like, we were trying to figure out the two songs. And it was Broken Wing. We had to look it up. I remember.
Take these broken wings.
Learn to fly again.
Yeah.
From the beat,
What do you think of this, Mr. Man?
Generally like it. You know, I like the keys in the beginning. I think they have a sort of like some sounds from the previous two instrumental albums kind of coming through, which is kind of cool. I love the bouncy bass. It kind of bubbles through the song. You know, and I like the start of that just asking the question, right? What's wrong with the world today? That's kind of this recurring line throughout the track, which I think is good. So it's in the spirit of like some other songs. Like you were talking, I thought of Stevie too, because I was a Stevie Wonder. I was thinking of Big Brother.
Yeah, totally. Yep. Totally.
A bit here. I mean, it doesn't sound, it's not sonically like Big Brother, but the spirit of it that's here. I mean, he runs through. Honestly, it's sort of like your checklist of world problems. Like, I don't think it's particularly interesting. He's like, okay, I'm going to mention war, check, poison, environment, check, issues. You know, like, it's just broadly mentioned. So there's no, like, specific laser focus on an issue he's trying to literally broaden out and explore, right? But I do really like this run of line. If you don't mind me, can bear with me reading through them. He said, this is towards the end of the song. He said, "Listen, there ain't no sense in voting. Same song with a different name," which I like. "Might not be in the back of the bus, but it sure feels just the same. Ain't nothing fair about welfare. Ain't no assistance in AIDS. Ain't nothing affirmative about your actions till the people get paid," right? And then he like actually starts talking about the 14th Amendment. I think that lyric chunk there is really brilliantly done. Like, he throws a lot of really specific information in and actually is quoting like an amendment in a way that's kind of funky, but on the money. Like, that takes a little bit of skill. I just think it's really a cool little run of lines. One thing that I think, and I want to hear your take on this. One thing I was fascinated about was what's the action item here in the song for Prince? It's writing a letter. So if you take it one way, in my mind, you can say how desperately sad it is that the only way to try to fight this long list that I just described of awfulness, horribleness, unfairness, you know, prejudice, all this stuff, is that I'm going to sit down and just write a letter. He doesn't mention who the letter's going to or who's going to get this letter. So it's like, is this what's the effect of the action of writing the letter to me, right? Who would he send it to? The cynic that you mentioned that I am, another part of me was like, if you look at it a different way, is it showing Prince as this part of his life in a bit of a bubble where he thinks because of his fame, whatever, you know, the best action I can take is just write a letter to someone, which creates a little bit of a distance from direct activism to some remote action that he's taking. Maybe I thought about the letter writing a little bit too deeply, but it really hit me. And it made me think about that as the action that he's saying, maybe we should write a letter, which felt like a little bit of anticlimactic piece of action, given the list of his concerns, right? I'll mention just one last thing here musically, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on all those different things. Maceo's here. You got a little Maceo in this. And I have to say, I kind of wanted a little bit more. The song, it's actually not a short song. It's like a 4-minuter, I feel like it ends a little quickly. Like it kind of comes back instrumentally to Maceo and it fades pretty quickly. And I actually was like, I could have listened to this for another minute or so. But what did you think about this? I just love to hear your thoughts on some of the things I mentioned.
I actually have a lot to say. I'll lay my cards on the table. This is my favorite track on the album.
Whoa.
I'll get to the lyrics in a second. And I want to respond to your thoughts because I think they're really interesting. I think that musically, this is, you know, we talk about Prince mentioned several times in all those pieces that he wants this to be a musical education, right? This to me is a song that is clearly the descendant of Curtis Mayfield, of Marvin Gaye, of the OJs. It is a funk. It's not really funk. It's more soul. It's a soul song with a political bent to it, which was particularly Curtis Mayfield. I mean, that was his sort of stock and trade was doing that. So I think musically, this song is really successful for me. It's got a burned out low candle, groove to it. The night's just falling as this sort of this sound of like dirty little boom, doom, boom, boom comes along, which I really, really like a lot. There's a little wah wah on the guitar, which is also very 70s of that era, which also makes me think of Curtis Mayfield in particular, because he was a master of that. So musically, it's really successful for me. I think that your point about, well, he's just sort of listing things. I think that's true, but I think what's effective is that, let me put it this way. Let me get to this point. Maybe we should write a letter is the lyric. And I get what you're saying. Well, that seems anticlimactic. But to me, the difference is here is that he doesn't write the letter. He says, maybe we should.
Yeah.
And the only other time we hear the letter is we want to end the letter with three words. We tire you all. Right. Okay. See, to me, this is a song about the frustration and the powerlessness that most of us feel most of the time.
Yeah.
Where, in other words, what I'm saying is this, maybe we should write a letter. I think he's being sarcastic. Like, well, maybe we should write a letter. Nothing else is nothing else works.
Got it.
Yeah, vote. Yeah, yeah. Voting doesn't matter, but et cetera,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. That lyrical run that you quoted is, it's excellent. It's excellent.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. But to me, this is actually our guy being a little cynical himself, saying none of this matters a lick. But what should matter is the 14th Amendment, which is this is the first time I've ever heard the 14th Amendment quoted in a pop song and a pop record. Right. So I think it's actually really clever and I actually find it really effective. I think this is a song that's really angry. It's a really angry song that is coded in smooth 70s Philly style soul music. And so for me, it's actually really successful. And I'll tell you what, as everyone knows, when Ed and I prep for these pods, we listen to the record a lot. We listen to it several times as we go through it. And of course, I've had musicology for years. I haven't revisited it in a long while. And as I was prepping for the pod, I must have listened to it, I don't know, 7 or 8 times. And each subsequent listen, every time I did, Dear Mr. Man grew every single time for me. I paid attention to it more. I tuned into it more and it just kept growing as a piece of art, as it went on. Now, I've said very publicly on the pod that I believe Sign of the Times is his best political song. I still believe that to be true. This is coming right up behind it for me.
Wow. Yeah,
this is coming right up behind it for me. And I think part of that is not just the lyrical content, but the effectiveness of the music, which is also why the music of Sign of the Times is what elevates it for me so high.
Sure.
The music for this, like, for example, I'll just put it this way. I think the music on Dear Mr. Man is better than the music in Avalanche.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
I just think it's more effective.
It's funny you should say that because I was going to ask you the question, like, don't you think the music somewhat belies the content?
I don't. And the reason I don't think that is because I'm thinking of it very specifically in terms of this musical education idea, this musicology idea, right? You know, like if you listen to all of the songs of Curtis Mayfield, if you listen to all of What's Going On,
yeah,
there's not that entire record is political, but it doesn't sound like it.
Right. You
know? Yeah. And I don't know what we think, you know, that's sort of an interesting question in and of itself. Like, what do we think that political music should sound like? I don't know. Does it sound like Rage Against the Machine, or does it sound against Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young? Because they wrote protest music too.
Right.
Like, I don't know. Protest music sounds like whatever it sounds like, you know, but for me, this is reflecting, you know, I'm thinking of Inner City Blues by Marvin Gaye. Like, this is reflecting city life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this song sounds like. It sounds and smells like the city, forgotten neighborhoods in the city. And that's why I find it very successful. And also the idea, you know, the title is Dear Mr. Man, the man, right? Who is the man?
Right.
It's
right.
All of these forces that are aligned against us all the time.
True. Yep.
And it's also, it's the system. It's, you know, that's also why you can't write you can't really write a letter to the system.
Right.
There's nowhere to address it. There's nowhere to send it to.
Right.
You know, there is a system that we live under. Here in the United States, well, everywhere. And I'm not bashing the United States, and I'm not, you know, I'm not doing that. But I'm not also going to say that things aren't problematic. Obviously, we all know
that they are,
right? Yeah. And I think this song is trying to say, what are we going to do? We have to do something, but I don't know that we can. Now, I'm not a cynic about it in my own personal life, but I think the rage and the anger in this, to go back to something you mentioned earlier, it recalls Big Brother to me. It recalls Stevie Wonder's Big Brother.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And to your point, like, just the sense that it's so overwhelming, all the issues, and all that pressure, that downward pressure, people are just tired. They're too tired to write a letter, right? Like, we're just too tired.
That's right.
Really good points.
Yeah. So that's my take on that.
Cool. Why don't we move on? We got the ultimate track. Is that true?
That's true. That is true.
That this is true. One's called Reflection.
Can I do that? Did we remember what are the plans today? I forgot to look up at the moving car. I was too busy.
Now, Jared, we talked about the use of mirrors in Lady Shanghai. Have we talked about use of mirrors like in Cocteau or any other films where like mirrors are kind of like what's your thoughts about mirrors and their use, their poetry, their use in art?
Wow. I'll say this. There's a lot of great songs about mirrors.
Mm.
There's I'll Be Your Mirror by Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground, which is a beautiful song, which is about I'll allow you to accept who you are because I accept it. I'll be your mirror, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. There's Man in the Mirror, of course, which, you know, whatever we might say.
That's a great, I love that track.
Man in the Mirror is great.
I love it, but
I think that the mirror is, it's sort of a fundamental aspect of humanity, actually, because we built them to look at ourselves.
Sure. And it's funny, like I've always felt like besides this, the practical nature of being able to see what you look like, I tend to think that when you really stare at yourself in the mirror, you tend to literally reflect on yourself. I think you're prone to.
How many movies have we seen? 100,000,000 where the protagonist, it kind of does like the, oh, I'm wiping my face in the mirror and then I'm going to stare into the mirror at myself.
Yeah, or even talk to themselves in the mirror, right?
A thousand times. We've seen that over and over again. Yeah,
absolutely.
The ability to have the capacity to reflect upon yourself is a unique trait.
Absolutely. I love this. And I think this is a good segue into the content of this particular track. So let's talk about Reflection. What did you think about this one?
Well, this is, I like it. I like Reflection, although I believe that this is an instance where, again, the music is sort of belying the lyrical content. The music is very, I believe the music is very frothy. Maybe frothy is not the right word. What's the word I want? It's very, I don't know. It's springy. It's sunshine and plants and flowers. And to me, that's what it sounds like. But like the opening lyric, two sevens together like time indefinite, try to catch the glass before it falls.
Mm.
Well, I mean, let's go. I'm in.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. I'm in. But then to follow that with, can you turn up the stereo? You know, and so there's something about that that I really like, the sort of this, the grand philosophizing and the poetry of the universe. And also, could you turn up my record? Cause I can't quite hear it. Like,
or did we forget or did we forget to water the plants today?
Or did we forget to water the plants
today? Daily? Yeah. Anything's right. And then these the big thoughts and small, real stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that, here we have a man who has made a conscious decision to create an album that will appeal to the mass public after having gone through some pretty radical emotional, spiritual, musical transformations and challenges over the last few records. And I think here he is reflecting on that journey of where he just was and where he is now and what are the decisions he made to lead him here. You know, and I think too, you know, like again, back to the lyric, you know what? Turning that stereo back down ain't nothing worse than an old worn out love song. So to me, this goes to your very first point and some of the points that some of the reviewers made, which is this just a sellout record?
Mm.
He might not know the answer.
Mm.
Turn that back down. There's nothing worse than an old worn out love song. But you know what? The thing is that we all like the worn out love songs. So it's just an interesting question. It is truly a reflection upon himself. And let me just say this. I think this is interesting too. So the song ends with this lyric. Sometimes I just want to go sit out on the stoop and play my guitar and just watch all the cars go by. Right? Okay. Now, I'm sure you paid attention, Ed, but for folks who are listening, if you haven't done this, if you're looking at particularly a digital copy of this, he finishes that lyric, all the cars go by, the music stops, and there is a minute and 10 seconds left on the track before it's over. And there's nothing. There's no hidden little bleeps and bloops. There's no like baby crying or like any sort of the Prince things we hear. It's just silence. Because he's inviting you to reflect upon what you are thinking about what you just heard.
Yeah.
That's my take on that. So that's my take on reflection.
I have to disagree with you a little bit. I really
wrong. That's wrong. Wrong.
No, I think the music works really well here. I think, like, for example, let me see if I can get my thoughts in order here. I think this shows Prince, which is rarely done, as a mortal, as a vulnerable human being person, right? Like your point about, I liked what you took out of, like, hey, at one point saying, hey, turn the music up, and it's like turn it down. But I think what I love about the song is there's this general sense of the human condition of being generally dissatisfied with things, right? Like all these thoughts, all this thing is swirling around in our lives, from the big thoughts to, did we water the plants today? I forgot to look at the moon because I was looking at you, but that's the romance. Like this swirling of life and general idea of dissatisfaction that can present. And what I love about it is he lands to let's make it simple. I just want to sit here and play my guitar. I love that line. That crushes me. Because it's like Prince as a human being, flesh and blood. You know, like after at the end of the day, I just like to sit here and play guitars and watch the cars go by.
Yeah,
I don't need anything else than that. I think that's beautiful sentiment. And I have to tell you another line that hits me. And again, like you said, this genius in the lyric of it going bouncing behind, you know, back and forth between big thoughts, small thoughts, little things, little details.
The macro and the micro.
Yeah. And he says, like, when our bodies run out, we can get another. And he's like, well, what does this one thing have to do with the other one? Right. So it's like you can imagine that there's a scenario of him maybe on a Saturday afternoon just hanging out with somebody and they're just talking. You're just talking with somebody.
Right. Sure.
Whatever's, and to have that person in your life that you can just share all of these types of thoughts with, the big, the small, the micro, the macro, whatever, like, is beautiful, right? And then that moment when it just, it slows down and he goes, I was just thinking about my mother.
Yeah.
Every time I hear that line, it hits me hard.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
I am a big fan of this. And like the breezy guitar, the flutes that sound like kind of like passing birds, just kind of floating. Like, I actually really like the song. The only thing about this that annoys me is, I don't know if you noticed this, I feel like whoever engineered this track, it's so much louder than the other tracks.
Yeah.
It comes in hot. I don't know.
That's true.
How and why for such as like a soft and like mix of like wistfulness and like all this stuff going on with this song, like for it to come in hot like that, I just can't believe he didn't have the ear to be like, why I need to change the levels here or something.
Right. Right. Right.
And as I was just saying this in a different way, I mean, I think there's something radical about Prince, the performer, saying he just wants to sit out and on the stupid play his guitar. I just love it. I'm a big fan of this song.
Yeah. No, I like it too. I don't want to make it sound like I don't like it, because I really.
Then why did you make it sound like that then? Is like, I just want to say.
You know, I just want to just quickly say that I take back all the grateful comments I made. Now this is just tiresome and tedious. yeah. I'm announcing the end of this partnership. No, that's not what I'm doing. Stop it.
I know.
Ed, what is your favorite track on Musicology?
My favorite track's On the Couch.
I love On the Couch. My favorite track is Dear Mr. Man.
I know. Well, yeah. Which not surprised to hear. Not surprised to hear.
Your least favorite, I'm guessing, is Life of the Party.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Life of the Party.
With a bullet. Silver bullet. Mine, as I said, is The Marrying Kind.
Yeah.
What's the most interesting track?
I kind of dig Illusion.
I have to say, oh, Illusion, yeah, for sure. I think to go back to what I said, is the most interesting track.
Oh, okay.
I'm just trying to parse that one out for me.
Okay, that's fair.
So that one's the most interesting for me. What is your favorite musical moment or any moment on the album?
I'm going to go to On the Couch. Let me repeat what I said. I just need to find nail that down. So again, that 2 minute mark on the Couch where... There's two, honestly. That one that which I describe at the 2 minute mark where he kind of isolates that one line of longing where he doesn't want to miss her kiss. And it's just, there's like a waterfall of him on vocal, harmony, trumpet, yeah, sax. Yeah. It's well done. And then I'll say on Musicology, the opening track, it's when he does These Are My Records, that kind of isolated breakout. I think it's like,
that's mine too. I love it.
Seven mark? Oh, yeah, I love it.
Don't ever touch my stereo. Don't ever touch my records. I love it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's for me too. And the other one for me is also the bass pluck on Call My Name.
Oh, yeah. Because
it's so good.
So good.
It's so good. So those are our favorites. Give an overall impression of Musicology. What is your summation of this record?
This one's a hard one for me, Jared, because I don't know if it's, I don't like it as much as a lot of other people do. And I don't know if it's that snobby, I'm a Prince fan part of my brain that doesn't want to accept this as it merits better praise. But to me, like, I'm like, I think people jumped on the Prince bandwagon because Prince was just so like in the news in 2004 and everyone was loving Prince. And I'm like, his album's not that good, guys. Like, you know, right. you want to say that as a Prince fan? So, but honestly, just critically reviewing it as we're going track for track, there's some really, really great tracks on this album. So I think it's uneven. Like, it's certainly an uneven album for me. I don't think it's a return to form in the way that I think of Prince as an artist. Like, I would think he would be coming in with some more edgy material. That's, to me, that's my Prince. That's his form.
Right.
I just think he kind of is letting it. This is where reflection kind of plays to me. Like, I feel like he's letting go the idea, like, I don't need to be ahead of the game here. I just need to make good music,
right?
Music that I'm satisfied with.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that he's there with this in his career in 2004. So in terms of a rating, I'd give it probably 3.5
Prince Symbols. Yeah, yeah. I think I'm on board with you with that. I agree with a lot of what you said. I like Musicology. It is not a top tier record for me, but I like it a lot. I really appreciate what I believe is his conscious effort to come back to something that is more in the popular consciousness than what he had just previously been doing. I think there are some great tracks on this record. I think only Marrying Kind is the only one I would be like, ugh, no, I'd get rid of it. But I think it's a very solid, if not spectacular, album on the whole.
Fair.
On the whole. That's what I would say. And I think I would also do 3.5 Prince Symbols. Maybe you could talk me into 3.75, but I think 3.5 is correct. That seems like,
yeah, I'm not gonna do that with Life at the Party on there. No,
that's fair.
Talking to 3.75.
Yeah. Sure, that's fair. So Ed, with that all being said, should we discuss musicology?
Yeah, let's do it.
Musicology. What is your musicology entry for this week's episode?
I'm going to do two quick singles, inspired by Dear Mr. Man.
Okay.
One I mentioned, which was Big Brother by Stevie Wonder.
Right.
I forget what album that's on from that.
Big Brother is on, I think it's on Talking Book.
Yeah. I mean, guys, any of those albums from that.
It doesn't matter. You can just get any of them. It doesn't matter. They're all brilliant.
So I'm going to say that one. And also in the same vein of that song, I'm going to throw in the mix, Excuse Me, Mister by Ben Harper.
Oh, man, I love Excuse Me, Mister by Ben Harper. You know what? Ben Harper, not that this has to become a Ben Harper pod. Ben Harper's first three albums are as good as anything anybody ever did. Like those three albums are so good. Anyway.
So, yeah, if you've never listened to Ben Harper, or you don't familiar with the song, listen to Excuse Me, Mister.
Called Please, Please Me Like You Want To. Do you know that song?
I don't know.
It is a slow burn of a song of one of those desperation songs. It is a slow burn.
Nice.
It makes you just want to rip the paint off the wall. Like, it's so great. Oh man, I'm a big
What's it called again? One more time?
It's called Please Please Me Like You Want To.
Please Please Me Like You Want To. Okay.
And his vocal barely gets above a whisper on that track.
Wow. Okay.
Oh man, it's great. My musicology entry, I'm going to offer up two. One I've already alluded to, which is, I'm going to just say, if you're a U2 fan or if you're not, give All That You Can't Leave Behind a try, because I really do feel like it is of a similar vein to this album. Not musically, of course, but it's similar in terms of the purpose behind it. The reason it exists is very similar. And there's some great songs on All That You Can't Leave Behind. There's a song on that album called Kite. In particular, that I just adore. It's a beautiful song.
Okay.
The other musicology option I'm going to give for this week's episode is by our own beloved OJs from the Philly region. The OJs, they have an album called Ship Ahoy from 77. Do you know this record, Ed?
Ship Ahoy? I don't know.
It's a great. The OJs were great. Let's just put that out there. The OJs were a great band, and the Ship Ahoy record is this funky, soulful, strange album that has a lot of, like, the song Ship Ahoy, for example, the title track, is about the slave trade. It's about slaves being brought over from Africa, and it's got all these kinds of, like, it's a narrative song, it's a story song, but it's all done with the funkiest Philly soul music of all time.
Nice.
So if you've never heard the album Ship Ahoy by the OJs, I highly recommend it to you. I think you will enjoy. Any Prince fan will enjoy that record.
Love it.
There you go.
Awesome.
So with that now covered, I guess it's time to turn to Dig, if you will.
Dig.
Oh, yeah.
Dig, if you will, the picture.
Ed, what do you make of this cover?
Hate it. Hate it. Hate it. Hate it.
Why do you hate it? Tell me why you hate it.
Listen, if you're going to be so smart to like say, I'm going to like 2004 could be my year, guys. I'm going to get a big hit record tour, Hall of Fame. Why put something together look like he did it in 10 minutes on a Mac? Like, it's a photo that's not particularly great of him. And I don't even know what the hell's in the background. Is it? It's like white background with like, is it tree branches? I don't even know what the thing is behind him. If I'm remembering the cover correctly, like there's nothing about that cover. And even the font for musicology looks like, I don't even know what it is. It's so, to me, uninspired. Like expectation had a better approach, I think, than this one.
Yeah. You know what? What is he standing? I thought he was standing in front of like marble. Like a marble wall. That's what I thought it was. I don't know. Like, I agree with you. It's not a great cover in that way. Like, I kind of wish he had gone even further into, like, I don't know, like the school theme. Like, could have come, there could have been some cool idea with, like, with an education or a school or a university or something. I don't know.
Or show me your bedroom with your record collection, dude. I'd be all right about that.
You know, I gotta say, you know, I do really feel like there's been a long stretch here where the album covers are just not very considered. It seems to be the least of his concerns is the album cover and the album art. Do you agree with that?
I feel that way. And I think because it was some of it was self distribution, right? So I think he was right, not worried that much. I'm looking at it like a blown up kind of photo of the album. What it looks like to me, Jared, is actually like it's a tree with snow on it, like snow on the branches. That's
oh,
it.
Oh, is that? Yeah, maybe you're right. Oh, yeah. You know what? Yep. I sort of couldn't see that now.
Yeah, it's subtle. It's subtle.
It's subtle. But you're right. It's like, yeah, it's like a snow covered tree, which doesn't have anything to do with the music at all.
Yeah, I don't
the
know what
it, the record at all.
Yeah, maybe I'm missing something, but I don't know what it has to do with anything, frankly.
So. It's just funny to me. I guess your point is well taken. Like when it came to self distribution, after the Warner Brothers fiasco, he just didn't seem to give a fuck about what the album art looked like. You know,
I mean, he had his moments. Like you and I are huge fans of Rainbow Children, right? That was right. His own thing.
That was great. Rainbow Children was great.
And One Night Alone, the live box set. I mean, it wasn't fancy, but it was a great photo of the guy. Like, he looked great.
And I also, I know you're not a fan of the record, but I am a fan of the Gold Experience cover because it sort of leans into what the album is, you know?
Yeah, yeah, but, I got you there.
You know,
yeah.
But there are so many, I agree. This is just, I don't know, it's just bad. I wish he took more care with this. It's just disappointing. It just is. You know, if anybody's out there a big fan of this cover, tell us. I'd be curious to hear your reasons for it. And so we can then tell you that you're wrong.
Absolutely.
Ed, let's hear it. Do you have a question for us, for you?
Absolutely. The question of you. All right. So here we go, folks. Now, Jared loves a song. It's called Dear Mr. Man.
It's true.
So this trivia question is about Dear Mr. Man.
Okay. Oh, all right.
So here we go. What famous African-American philosopher, political activist, social critic, actor, and public intellectual has this track on one of his albums where he does overdubs on top of this, on top of the track, Dear Mr. Man?
Wow. This is a great question. So what notable African-American activist, author, actor, all these things.
Public intellectual. Blah, blah,
public blah. Intellectual does a cut, like essentially sort of does a cover or like some kind of remix of Dear Mr. Man with their own vocals on top of it. Spoken word vocals.
I'm assuming. Yeah. It's just vocal, like him speaking issue. Him
speaking.
I'm thinking over the actual.
I have song. A guess that I will.
You're probably I don't know right. I think it's probably who you're thinking.
I'm going to throw the guess off air. All right, folks. So you know the drill. Hit us up with your speculations on this one. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, our email, whendovespodcast@gmail.com, all lowercase. Hit us up with that and we'll give you a shout out.
I want to say this to Sam, our good friend Sam, really.
Our good friend Sam.
So Sam, I love that you took the time to write to say, hey, I listened to the last podcast and I was so excited. He was so excited, Jared, that we had an ad. Said, you guys have an ad, which makes me say that a lot of people are listening and you guys are rocking it and I'm excited. I just want him to know, just to be because we're transparent with our listeners.
We're transparent.
We made 56 cents.
56 American cents.
From that ad, just so you know.
That's right. We made 56 cents and we were pretty psyched about it. We also want to say, Ed and I want to say this too, for whatever this is worth. We didn't choose how the ad was inserted.
Yeah, it's good to know that. Yeah.
It was done automatically. We didn't edit it in there. That's just how it happened. But, you know, nevertheless, I think we were still pretty excited to have an ad.
We were
still pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
And we're happy to take that 56 cents and buy, I don't know, a gumball. Can you even buy a gumball?
Maybe
for
a gumball.
Cents?
Maybe a gumball.
Yeah, maybe a gumball. I don't know. But anyway, yes. And Sam, you know what? Speaking of Sam, I'm expecting we're going to hear big things from Sam because he's a musicology guy, as I recall.
That was his. Was that his entry point? Was Musicology like where?
Oh, that it was his like re-entry point.
Oh, sure. I think for a lot of fans, actually,
for a lot of fans, for a lot of fans.
I'll be curious to hear what folks.
Yeah, I think folks can have a lot of opinions about Musicology. Yeah, so hit us up with those. But anyway, Ed, what are we going to do next episode on When Doves Podcast?
Well, I can tell you with all confidence, we're going to review another one of his albums.
We're going to do the Chocolate Invasion next. That is the next record on the docket. And we'll have some other things coming up as well, of course. So, everybody, thanks again for listening. We're grateful and honored that you continue to spend some time with us. And we hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving. And until next time,
may you
live
to
see
the dawn.
The dawn. Bye, everybody.
Love you guys. Bye. Take care. Bye-bye.